This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, keeping track of the daily count of new COVID-19 cases can be mentally and emotionally tiring, especially when the numbers don't always seem to line up with one another. That was the case when the local health department of Dane County announced 456 new cases of COVID-19 on September 10th, but Wisconsin's health department website reported 482 for that county. Turns out that both of those numbers are correct. It gets a little complicated. WisContext reporter Will Cushman has taken a look at how to interpret state and local COVID data in his latest story. He's been following COVID trends since the beginning. Well, Will, welcome back.
Thanks, Rob.
Well, before we get into the finer points of interpreting those daily numbers, let's look at the broad trends right now. Numbers, if I'm reading things correct, have definitely been going up in Wisconsin lately.
Oh, yeah, they are. They're going up pretty precipitously. We've been breaking records most days in the last week, and today we're at another record, over 2,500 new confirmed cases across the state today.
Now, for people who watch numbers every day, as you write in your most recent WisContext piece, Will, sometimes things don't seem to match up with one another, depending on whose information you're reading. Where might we see some of these contradictions or apparent contradictions in the numbers?
Right. People might notice that if they're paying attention to either the information that the Wisconsin Department of Health Services publishes on its COVID outbreaks webpage every day, or if they're keeping close tabs on any number of local health departments' online data dashboards. So all sorts of, quite a large number of local health departments in the state, not all of them, but a large number of them maintain these public data dashboards where they update local case numbers every day.
And it might happen in a day that County X says one number, the state reports a different number for that same county. But here's the weird thing. Neither of them is necessarily wrong. Do I have that right?
Yeah, no, it can be really confusing. I mean, even for those of us like me who are reporting on this day in and day out, like how can a local health department report one number and then the state report another number? And it really boils down to how the reporting system works. So COVID-19 is a Category 1 reportable disease in Wisconsin, which means that when a healthcare practitioner, so a doctor, or a lab that's testing for the virus that causes COVID-19 confirms a diagnosis, they must report that diagnosis immediately by phone to their local health office, but then also within 24 hours, either via mail, fax, or what's most common, by uploading a case report to the Wisconsin Electronic Disease Surveillance System. And this online system, then local health officers, local health departments, as well as the State Department of Health Services, pull data from that every single day to inform things like contact tracing, and then also to just understand trends generally in COVID-19 case numbers and deaths and hospitalizations. And so the difference really boils down to when folks at these local health departments actually download the data, like the time of day that it happens. And for the most part, the local health departments will start downloading data. It can be up to a two-hour process, depending on how much there is to download, so how many new cases there are. But most of the time, they'll start doing that first thing in the morning to help contact tracers get a jump on the day. And the state tends to download their data a little bit later in the day. And so as new case reports come into the electronic surveillance system pretty much constantly, the state is going to likely report a different number of cases than a local health department, especially when there is a surge in cases.
Now, here's maybe a dumb question that I've been wondering about, Will. Say I get a test on Tuesday and the result comes back on Thursday, a positive or negative, does my result count for Tuesday or Thursday, or does it depend on where we're talking about and who's the reporting agency?
Yeah. No, that's a really good question. And again, it's kind of complicated. That's one more reason why the numbers might be different depending on where you're looking. So the State Department of Health Services, the new numbers that they announce every day, those are simply new case reports that are have arrived in the system since the last time the state downloaded data 24 hours previously. But some local health departments, including the one in Dane County, actually will backdate new cases to the date of when the test results were made available. And so that's why, even though you mentioned at the beginning that on September 10th, Dane County reported 456 new cases of COVID-19 and the state reported 480-some. But then now when you look at Dane County's data dashboard, you'll see that it's only 200-some cases for September 10th and actually more than 400 for September 9th. And that's because most of those new test results that they announced on September 10th were from September 9th. So it can get pretty complicated pretty quickly.
We're talking with Will Cushman, associate editor of WisContext, about his latest piece on understanding COVID data. Sometimes the numbers don't match up, but it's more of a matter of when and how they're reported. The piece is called Why Wisconsin State and Local Coronavirus Updates Differ Day to Day. You can see it at wiscontext.org. Coming up, we'll talk about what is done with some of this data. And time permitting, we'll talk a little bit about Will's reporting on stats about mask usage around the state. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now with WisContext journalist Will Cushman. He reported on why some of the daily COVID numbers for new cases don't line up around the state. Let's get a little bit into the why here, Will, and what these numbers are used for. And you made an interesting point in your WisContext piece. If you're that local health person or the county health person, you want these test results up and ready as soon as possible so you could start to take action. What kind of action does this lead to at the local level?
Exactly. Yeah, local health officers want any new data about case reports in their jurisdiction first thing in the morning. And really that is to get a start on contact tracing as quickly as possible. Contact tracing is most effective when it is done really quickly, really promptly. And so that's why local health officers and local departments are going to be downloading their data pretty much as soon as they're up in the morning.
At the state level, they don't have that urgency, I guess, because mostly the state isn't doing the contact tracing. What kind of things are they hoping to spot as they compile these results?
Right. Yeah, exactly. The state is not directly responsible for contact tracing. They are definitely assisting in areas that need assistance with contact tracing. But the State Department of Health Services is more interested in looking at overall trends, identifying maybe local areas where they might have to think about allocating additional resources, whether it's contact tracing or additional testing or informational campaigns, anything along those lines.
Now, for members of the public like me looking at this data, I'll admit I look day to day at numbers, some state ones, some national ones. And when I look at the day to day ones, if it goes down from one day to the next, I'm happy. If it goes up, I'm bummed. But watching that day-to-day fluctuation, you write, isn't really a good way to spot the trends. What do experts say we should be looking for when we're trying to figure out really the progress, pro or con here?
Yeah, I spoke to an epidemiologist at UW-Milwaukee, Amanda Simonek, who crunches the numbers every day as part of her job, and she actually helps advise Milwaukee with its pandemic response. And she said what she pays attention to and what she recommends all of us armchair epidemiologists out there do is to look at longer-term trends. So look at weekly trends, seven-day averages. You're right. We do maybe tend to focus a little bit on those day-to-day fluctuations and maybe a little bit too much on those very specific numbers, especially when there appear to be little discrepancies between reporting agencies. But she said that the big picture is really what's more important. To get a good understanding of it, you should be looking at those longer-term averages in new cases.
And when we do that and we're looking at those weekly averages, those differences that happen, as we were talking about earlier, where one agency says this happened on this day, the other agency has a different number, those I imagine would tend to get smoothed out and will get more and more consistent as we take that broader look. Is that accurate?
It is, yeah. We actually Did that with some just maybe 2 weeks worth of data between, or maybe it was a little bit longer actually, a month or so of data between what Public Health Madison and Dane County was reporting for new cases day to day, and then what the State Department of Health Services was reporting for Dane County. And when you look at just the day-to-day case numbers, there are a lot of pretty big differences, especially in the last week or so as cases have really spiked in Dane County. But when you apply those seven-day averages, there's still some minor differences in what those averages say day-to-day, but which is to be expected. But you're right, it's those differences get smoothed out, and when they tell the same story, essentially, that cases are on the rise in Dane County.
I want to touch briefly on a piece you wrote, released a couple weeks back, Will, on mask usage. We know generally the more we're wearing our masks when we're around other people, the better off we're going to be. How do we try to measure mask wearing? It's not like there's this kind of daily data collection like we see for COVID tests. How are public health people trying to track whether or not we're wearing masks?
That's a really good question, and I think one that probably a lot of people in Wisconsin are wondering, like, especially how is the mask mandate, for instance, enforced? And there are a couple ways that researchers have tried to gauge mask wearing rates in Wisconsin specifically. There are actually some researchers who went around to some grocery stores. I didn't report on this specifically because it was just one kind of small study, but there were some researchers who just observed people in grocery stores and counted, literally just counted the number of people who were wearing masks. But then there is some more ambitious research done by a company called Dynata on behalf of the New York Times, where they surveyed actually 250,000 Americans on their mask-wearing habits, including thousands of people in Wisconsin.
Before we wrap up, Will, I remember early on in this whole thing, we were talking, and we both talked about how we felt kind of silly putting on a mask in public. This is like back in April. Are you feeling like it's more of a natural thing for you now?
I think so, for sure. Yeah. You know, I now carry a mask with me pretty much anytime I'm leaving the house, even if I'm just going on a walk around my neighborhood, which I do pretty much every day. And I think a lot of my neighbors do, too. And that's just in case I happen to be in a situation where I have to put on a mask if I can't maintain that 6 feet of a distance. And yeah, I would say I'm definitely getting more comfortable with it. How about you?
Me too, except when I accidentally grab a mask meant for one of my smaller-headed family members. I have a very large head, apparently, and large nose. And then it's this like bizarre balancing act where I try to keep my ears in place to hold it up. Otherwise, I'm doing pretty good. Will, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
Will Cushman is the associate editor of WisContext. He joined us to talk about his latest WisContext article, Why Wisconsin State and Local Coronavirus Updates Differ Day to Day. You can find a link to that at WPR.org/Central Time. Follow lots of COVID-related news, a lot of good graphics and data visualization at WisContext.org. Coming up after the news, our guest came up with a list of 50 things we can do with our kids during the pandemic this fall. We'll run through a few of them, and you can join in with your ideas as well. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. In just a few minutes, we're going to look at some great ways to enjoy the fall, even during a pandemic season, ways to get out and do cool stuff or stay in and do some cool stuff. You can join in at 800-642-1234 as Labor Day weekend. You know, it kind of marks the unofficial end of summer. Well, here it is, the real deal coming up, autumn rolling around early next week. COVID-19 is affecting our plans, but we could still have a lot of fun, our next guest says. She wrote a piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that has 50 activities you can do with your kids this fall, even with all the stuff going on. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your favorite things to do in fall? How do you plan to enjoy the season despite, you know, social distancing, mask wearing, and crowd avoiding? What have you and your family done already since the weather turned more fall-like? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Amy Schwabe is a reporter who writes family-focused stories for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Amy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks.
Now, are you, I'm a person, I get excited for fall. I like fall. Does fall get you excited to do cool fally stuff?
Yeah, I think I finally admitted to my family a few years ago that fall's my favorite season. Before I was all like, oh, summer because of summer vacation. But now fall in Wisconsin is just so beautiful.
Yeah, talk a little more. What is it about fall that that makes you happy?
Well, I think it's not too hot, but it's still nice enough to get outside. And that's kind of perfect. You know, during the pandemic, we still have time to enjoy ourselves outside before. And then kind of get into that transition of, you know, thinking of some cozy things to do inside.
Now, you wrote a piece with 50 suggestions, mainly geared toward families, though I think a lot of us could appreciate them with or without kids. One kind of category, a lot of things are closed, but there are still things we could find out that are open and kind of friendly, even in the COVID-19 time. What kind of outings do you have in mind?
Well, definitely for fall, in my family, it's always apple picking and pumpkin picking, and most of the orchards and farms are open. They have, you know, they have COVID restrictions for social distancing and some capacity requirements sometimes. But for the most part, if you stay with your, you know, your household members, you can have fun just getting all those fall things and getting them in the house and making some, you know, apple pie, pumpkin pie, all those great smells of the fall.
And another great outing that's easy to be pretty socially distanced at, leaf viewing. I checked out the charts from the state earlier today. We're just starting to see some changes. There's a lot of great colors ahead of us. Do you have favorite places you like to go to see the leaves?
Well, I know that we would always drive up by Holy Hill and, you know, just around whatever neighborhood you live in, you can find places to go. I mean, nice neighborhood walks, hikes, biking, just, you know, jumping in the leaves, I think everywhere.
Let's bring out a caller at 800-642-1234. Michelle is with us in, Janesville. Michelle, hi.
Hi. So I would like to share a hobby that my family does. Fall just seems like the best season to do it because the weather is perfect. But it's basically a worldwide scavenger hunt called letterboxing.
What is that? I'm not familiar with that.
So letterboxing is kind of like geocaching, but you don't need a GPS device. You go online and there's a website that you can find the names of different boxes and then the clues that go with those boxes. And you have to go find these boxes. And instead of leaving a little trinket or taking something like geocaching, you stamp your image in their journal. And then they have a hand-carved stamp in their box that you then stamp in your journal. And it's a worldwide hobby.
Wow, that sounds pretty fun. And yeah, fall sounds like a great time to do it. Have you been out in the last couple of weeks, or do you have plans coming up, Michelle?
Yes, we actually were out last weekend at Beckman Mill in Beloit. And this weekend, I think we're planning on going to Madison.
Well, now hold on. You're leaving me in suspense here. Did you find the box in Beloit?
Well, we found two out of the three that we were searching for. So pretty good day.
Michelle, thank you so much. I love that. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Amy, any other fun, outdoor hobby suggestions that you compiled for your list?
One thing that was big in spring and summer as the pandemic was starting was sidewalk chalk. And a lot of people were getting really creative with it and kind of like writing inspiring messages. And I had actually been interviewing some of the toy stores in the area, and they were all selling out of sidewalk chalk, but they're getting their supplies back in. And there are fun things to do, like doing those messages for people out on their walks. And also, I had read another idea that was kind of like looking for famous artwork, like even look on the art museum's website or something like that. And then just everybody in your family trying to recreate it.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Michelle, we are talking to Amy Schwabe from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She wrote a piece. You can find it at jsonline.com. 50 suggestions for families of stuff that you could do during the fall in Wisconsin, even during COVID-19. Now, Amy, a lot of your suggestions involve kind of getting creative. If we're stuck at home more, you found some creative uses for our house and yard. First of all, let's go outside a little bit since the weather's still nice. What kind of things can we do maybe in our own backyard to shake things up?
Well, I think this year is going to be big for decorating the yard for Halloween. I have been starting to talk to people about they're kind of letting their kids like take over, like maybe with jack-o'-lanterns, building your own scarecrows. And even if you're not, if there's one person who was talking about how they're not spending a bunch of money on trick-or-treat candy this year, and instead they're just going all out with buying decorations. So that's one idea.
You also made a plug for backyard camping. Even if you can't get a production together to go out and camp in the parks, just a tent in the yard can do the job.
For sure. Just have your tent in the yard, get out there, and, you know, the ghost stories, the board games, puzzles, s'mores if you have a fire pit. But even if you don't have a fire pit, just do it on the grill.
And you also looked for some indoor activities, maybe when the weather isn't so nice, kind of, I guess, along the theme of planning events indoors. I think there was the idea of movie festivals. Can you give us some suggestions along those lines?
Well, I know the movie theaters are starting to open back up, but a lot of people don't really feel safe going to them. And frankly, there's not a lot to see yet. So I always, with my kids when they were little, now they're teenagers now and they're willing to, we kind of all have the same likes and dislikes now. But when they were little, one thing we would do was do a marathon of movies that we were trying to introduce them to from our childhood. So we shared a lot of fun ones that way. A good one for this time of year is Ghostbusters.
And are you already starting to plan? I'm a little ahead of the game here. Are you starting to think about a Halloween film festival with the teenagers?
Well, yeah, that's a good thing to start thinking. I haven't started thinking about it yet, but yeah, definitely that one. And I think any, you know, frankly, the beginning, one of the reasons I love fall so much is you start thinking about all the winter holidays. So I think it's a good year to get out ahead of stuff and start planning to be creative.
Yeah, and as we hit winter and we might get a little bit of cabin fever, especially since we may not still not be able to go to the indoor locations, how can we shake things up around the house to make it feel new and fun again, especially maybe with the younger kids?
One thing that I know a lot of kids are doing virtual school right now and probably will be going back and forth between virtual school. And for the kids who are even younger than school age, since everybody's kind of around each other all the time, one thing that I was thinking was a good idea is to kind of have a space for each person. Even if you don't have room for like a whole room for a person, if it could be just like a corner of the house and let them like deck it out, like blankets, build a fort, do whatever they want. And if they are doing virtual school, just let them have school in their fort.
Yeah, a lot of your ideas, I love this, are kind of letting the kids take the driver's seat and just saying, you know what, maybe we relinquish a little bit of control here and let them set up their surroundings the way they want to. I think that's a fun way to think about it. Is that something you see people embracing, especially with the new school year?
I think so. And I think that especially since, I mean, so many things are canceled and it's hard to think of things that are interesting, you know, kind of get your kids involved instead of trying to set everything up yourself. One thing that I would do for my younger daughter as in spring and then in summer, since everything was canceled, when she would come and she'd be bored and looking for something to do, I would be like, well, why don't you make something? Because she's always hungry. And I would just like open up the pantry and the refrigerator. I'm like, go for it. And for nice. Younger kids, you probably do have to set things up a little bit more. But even just setting out like a bunch of candy, cereal, cupcakes, frosting, let them go to town. You can clean it up. It's fine.
That's basically how I eat anyway. Now, you also, you know, a lot of in-person events are canceled, but you talk about a few in the Milwaukee area and elsewhere that we can still join virtually. So talk about, you know, the joy of maybe going online for some of those cool activities.
There are some cool activities online. I know that a lot of like the recreation departments that don't have things in person yet do have things like, I know there are things like Mommy and Me yoga types of things. And also the places like the museums, who aren't going to have field trips this year, obviously, they've started setting up some virtual field trips that even if you're not a teacher, you can be part of, because frankly, a lot of parents are teachers this school year.
And as we wrap up, do you have plans on the books for, I guess, what's technically the last official weekend of summer?
Well, we're going to try to go apple picking.
Nice.
So, yeah. And that's one of my favorite activities from when my kids were little, to make apple people. Just give them, it's along the same lines as the opening the kitchen up to them, but just let them like make faces with candy and cereal and frosting on apples. And then the bonus of that is they have fun and they're actually eating an apple.
Win-win. Amy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks.
Amy Schwabe is a reporter who writes family-focused stories at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We talked with her about activities we can do with kids during the ongoing pandemic this fall. You can check out her piece, 50 Ideas, there. We've got a link at wpr.org/centraltime.